coming up on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast.
You know, that with ketamine, for example, we really work with people slowly, you know, that we start somebody with really low dose ketamine. And, you know, ketamine is kind of misunderstood as some people not considering it a psychedelic, and because it's, you know, the designation is dissociative anesthetic. But in the moderate and high doses, it has, you know, very strong psychedelic property. And so when we work with clients, we start with low doses and allowing them to, you know, get familiar with the feels, get familiar how to work with the medicine, how to trust the process. And the healing can happen through processing challenging experiences, but as well through having beautiful, you know, like positive experiences. And so sometimes in psychotherapy, we're, you know, and a lot of clients are focused on like, I have to go into the darkness and the shadow and work through things. And, you know, I think that is true. And there can be healing through really beautiful experiences and having break from the challenges people are having and awe and, you know, beauty and unity. And so that people are learning how to work with the medicine and then, you know, maybe working with moderate or higher doses.
Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast, a weekly conversation series with leaders in psychedelic culture, designed for therapists, healers, retreat leaders, and passionate enthusiasts. Presented by Maya and hosted by me, Eamon Armstrong. Welcome back to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. Have you ever wondered what it would take to create a psychedelic therapy clinic? Today's guest, Veronica Gold, co-founder of Polaris Insight Center in San Francisco, has done just that. Our conversation starts with Veronica meeting Stanislav Grof at 16 years old in the Czech Republic, and we follow her journey from studying at CIIS, the California Institute of Integral Studies, to founding Polaris. We cover the challenges she has faced from battling misconceptions to therapeutic transference to providing equal access to psychedelic medicine. We also discuss the efficacy of different therapeutic modalities as well as different molecules. Veronica has an MA in clinical psychology from the Charles University in Prague and also an MA in integral counseling psychology from CIIS. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist with certificates in EMDR, somatic experiencing, emotionally focused therapy, and realization process. She is a sub-investigator and a co-therapist in MAPS clinical program for MDMA-assisted psychotherapy and has trained in ketamine-assisted therapy with Dr. Raquel Bennett at Cura Institute and Dr. Phil Wolfson and Julaine Andres at the Ketamine Training Center. Good therapeutic relationships are a cornerstone of creating a good set and setting for psychedelic-assisted therapy. And Veronica clearly has what it takes to help her clients heal. Well, Veronica, welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. It's so nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and you have a lot of experience and wisdom, and you've done a lot of different training, and your background is in so many different powerful psychotherapeutic modalities in addition to the work that you're doing with psychedelic-assisted therapy. I feel like you have a lot of wisdom to impart on our listeners here today.
Yeah, delighted to be here. Definitely, it's been a journey. I'm originally a psychologist from the Czech Republic, and I moved to the United States in 2013 and went to CIIS to get my second master's in integral counseling, and then did just a variety of trainings. And, you know, I think it's getting better in doing therapy and helping my clients better, but of course, as well, my personal interest and passion in learning about our psyche, consciousness, relationships, and healing.
It's a wonderful career path you've chosen for learning those things, because you are definitely on the cutting edge with the psychedelic microscope that we're beginning to look at the mind through right now. So that must be a very invigorating place to be as someone who has those interests.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time is what's happening. And, you know, I met Stan Grof when I was 16, turning 17, so a long time ago. And I had this long passion and exploration of consciousness and, interest in healing through an ordinary state of consciousness, but it's really not been until about 5 years ago when those two came together, and I've been able to work as psychedelic assisted therapist and, you know, started a clinic and now as well providing training. So it's been a long journey and a very exciting path and exciting times we are in as we're, you know, revisioning kind of the way of healing and revisioning the psyche, and these new ways of healing are becoming much more mainstream.
It sounds like a really wonderful moment of bringing together these two passions in your life. I'm curious, when you were younger, did you suspect that psychedelics would have such powerful medicinal properties?
Yeah, so I definitely, you know, was very fortunate in meeting Stan Grof so early. You know, I grew up in a communist time and, in communism in Czech Republic. And after the revolution, there was just so much support and people from the West coming in. And so Stan Grof did a big training for a group of therapists in Czech Republic. And I ended up working with one of them as my therapist. And, you know, it was time and everyone was exploring with psychedelics and you know, as well, you know, learning much more about them. And I learned about the medicinal properties, you know, very early on, and read a lot about the work Stan Grof has done. And so I definitely, saw that, but I didn't think that or didn't imagine that in my life I would have the opportunity to work with them in that way. Because in the time, you know, you would read about a research that was done in the 60s and 70s, but now these medicines were scheduled. And, you know, so it seemed like something so far, far ahead.
And so did you come to the U.S. specifically to go to CIIS, or did you come for another reason and then you found CIIS once you were here?
Yeah, so I came specifically to see CIIS. I did not imagine I would be able to study there. And really, if I wanted to come here because of Stan Grof, my intention was to come and visit. And then kind of things happened, you know, I was in a relationship and, you know, stayed here longer and got, you know, to CIIS and was able to apply. I've learned about CIIS in holotropic breathwork training that I've taken in Australia. And so I've learned about a school. I've learned that Stan Grof was teaching there at that time. And so I specifically came to see the school and, you know, see Stan, but I didn't imagine I would end up getting a degree there, which happened and was a beautiful journey, because as well as I was in school, there was a group of people who started the transpersonal center. So there, you know, at CIIS, you can do a practicum, and there are different centers that CIIS has. It's a somatic center and relational therapy center, gestalt therapy oriented center. And at the time when I was there, the transpersonal therapy center was started. I think it has a little bit different orientation now, but it was really exciting time. And I think I was in the second cohort at the center. And so it was kind of a bringing back, you know, kind of the history of this area and being in the beginning of this movement, increased interest in transpersonal psychology again.
And you mentioned holotropic breathwork. And for the listener who might not be familiar with exactly what that is, would you mind just explaining that briefly for us?
Yeah, so it's a method of breathing and combined with music and bodywork and set and setting that was developed by Stan Grof and his late wife, Christina Grof. And they developed it after LSD became scheduled medicine. So Stan did a lot of, you know, work with LSD psychotherapy. And when LSD became a scheduled medicine, he was living in Esalen, he was writing, and they were doing a lot of workshops. And they developed this method where they created this optimal set and setting combined with breathing that would elicit a non-ordinary state of consciousness. And so that, you know, they were offering these 3-4 hour long sessions where people would enter intentionally in a non-ordinary state with the purpose of healing and transformation. So really similar to what we are doing today in psychedelic assisted therapy, and actually the MAPS protocol for MDMA assisted psychotherapy for the treatment of trauma is as well based on work of Stan Grof and holotropic breathwork, and the same with our ketamine practice. So it's almost like we're standing on the shoulders of this work that has been done, and you know, it hasn't been just developed by Stan Grof. It's a history of hundreds and thousands of years of cultures working with non-ordinary states of consciousness for healing and transformation and kind of learning from what they have learned about or created about a set and setting for this type of healing.
Mm. And I know that you've given some talks about set and setting, so I definitely want to make sure that we talk about that a little bit later on today. But for the moment, let's go back to CIIS, because I think that a lot of people are interested in their psychedelic assisted therapy program. And you mentioned that there's a number of different schools within the school.
Yeah, so the program I went to is called Integral Counseling Psychotherapy Program, ICP, and that is kind of the track for psychotherapists. When I was at CIIS, the program for the psychedelic research and psychotherapy wasn't in existence yet. And, you know, there is a track for somatic psychotherapy. There, you know, a lot of different schools that are now, you know, kind of a specializations you can take once you go to school there.
And so what was the journey from CIIS to opening a clinic? I imagine that you were doing a private practice first and later on you decided to open a clinic. I'm curious how, because I think for a lot of people listening, they may just be beginning to do this kind of study and are sort of curious, well, how do I turn that into an actual practice, create a clinic, create a community? What was that journey like for you?
Yeah, so, you know, my journey to that was very organic. And it, you know, after CIIS, I was working in as a private practice psychotherapist, and I continued to get different trainings and doing personal work, you know, and I think that is for being a psychedelic assisted therapist, you know, being any therapist, but working with psychedelics even more, your personal work is so important, you know, in order to be able to hold a process for clients. And so I was doing a lot of personal work. I did training in somatic experiencing and organic intelligence and Hakomi and several others. And then in 2016, I was invited into the MAPS training for the MDMA-assisted psychotherapy. And there I've met my colleague, Julaine Andries, who has been at the time working with Phil Wolfson already, you know, they just started providing ketamine-assisted psychotherapy.
What year was that?
So 2016. So it's been about four or five years ago that we started the training. And so I became really excited about the possibility of working with the medicine in a, you know, legal set and setting. And so I started working at an infusion clinic. So, you know, one of the ways that ketamine is used and probably most widely known is through infusion. And a lot of research has been done. And my intention was to create a psychedelic assisted psychotherapy program at an infusion clinic. And so I was working with a psychiatrist who was providing infusions, and we were developing a program that would go alongside for those patients who were interested in psychotherapy. And it was, you know, exciting project, and a lot of great work has been done there. And, you know, my relationships with my colleagues at MAPS has been growing. And so, you know, three of us have decided to get together and to start our, you know, own clinic, and then two more other colleagues joined us. So Polaris really came from this deep friendship of five of us who were working on the MAPS clinical trials and, you know, witnessing this transformations and the healing potential of the medicine and desire to be able to work with the medicine now. And, you know, in the beginning, we were thinking about the ketamine clinic being like a model of future clinics for working with MDMA, psilocybin, and other medicines. And we all really, you know, liked the molecule ketamine, but we've as well grown to like it even more, you know, over the time working with it and really seeing the potential. And so it's been very organic growth, you know, that we came together, started a clinic. Really in the beginning, we started bringing in our patients from private practice who felt like a good candidates for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, and then starting to work with new patients. And you know, over the last about 3.5 years, we've really have grown. So now we have about 25 practitioners that we work with, psychotherapists, psychiatrists, nurse practitioners. And, you know, our growth idea and model was to really, you know, how can we grow and provide the therapy to more people, making it more accessible while really staying true to the values that we've brought into the work. And so, you know, kind of not shortening the sessions, not compromising the set and setting, and as well, you know, staying connected with each other and having the community and support of everyone who works together. So
what are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced in staying true to those values while trying to grow a clinic?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we are kind of, you know, thinking about it all the time and talking about it and really wanting to have the treatment more accessible. And, you know, there are a lot of roadblocks to that just with running a business. And, you know, I think California is even more difficult than some other states. So we have colleagues in other states where it is easier, you know, less expensive to have a clinic. And so how to provide a service in an affordable way, and as well that, you know, we can pay our therapists well, because we see that that's been one of the big challenges in the field of psychotherapy, that the psychotherapists are not valued, you know, and, you know, we can say similar with like teachers and therapies, and that, you know, a lot of clinics work with interns who will work, you know, for free as a part of their internship. And by the time they get licensed, they're so burned out because of all these years of, you know, working for free. So one of the things we as well wanted to give, you know, fair pay to the therapists while, you know, making it affordable. And so finding different ways of sliding scales, of having different foundations that could help clients who cannot afford a treatment. So, you know, I think that's been definitely a challenge. And it takes energy of creating the community. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is, you know, of course, we have somebody, you know, like who is a director or who has to decide what happens, but for everyone to have a voice, you know, having this kind of community leadership, and that, you know, we really can have conversations and make decisions together. So maybe it's a slower way of doing things, but we think it's really rewarding and kind of rethinking the way how a lot of clinics have been in the past.
Are there any unique challenges you've faced in terms of creating a psychedelic-assisted therapy clinic versus creating a private practice or another type of clinic? Are there some unique difficulties that you've had to overcome in the space of working with psychedelics?
Mm-hmm. So I think there's, you know, several. One, I think there's this unique way of that we, you know, it is a medical treatment. So working with ketamine as well as will be with MDMA or psilocybin is a medical treatment. So you're, you know, working with the physician, the medical provider is, you know, the one who's deciding about a treatment. But we are creating, you know, a lot of medical doctors don't have experience with psychotherapy. And even a lot of psychiatrists don't have such a vast training in psychotherapy. And so we are creating this collaboration of, you know, physicians and therapists to work together, and as well having a feedback from the client, so that there is this kind of like a triangle of the physician, the therapist, the client that work together, which I think is quite unique, you know, that we kind of bring those together and work in an equal way of deciding about a treatment. So there is much more communication, much more case conferences, case consultations that we have with our physicians about a treatment. And, you know, it is like something that, you know, the field has been really impacted by the war on drugs. Mm. And so a lot of people have, you know, misconceptions and misunderstandings about this treatment. And so we are as well always, you know, involved in providing a lot of education. And, you know, the way how we work is that our clients as well have outside therapists. And so there is a lot of education, even with therapists, you know, that there are a lot of therapists who don't know about psychedelic assisted therapy. They don't know about ketamine. And, you know, maybe there is even more reports on psilocybin or MDMA research, but a lot of people have quite a lot of misconception about ketamine and, you know, it being used as a psychedelic. So there, you know, I think those are kind of unique challenges when you're collaborating with other providers outside of the clinic as well. And, you know, and that I think is the same with clients, you know, that some people come and they see it as the last resort. They've tried a lot of other treatments and some of them are really open to this type of treatment and some of them have a lot of fears or these kind of internalized messages about, you know, using drugs or substances. And, you know, there is a shift in, you know, the length of the sessions. So the sessions are much longer, you know, we have 3-hour long sessions. So it's something different for therapists and for clients to think about, you know, in practical level, it can really be around like, how do you schedule sessions, you know, from just like those day-to-day operations. I think they're quite unique things around working with psychedelics and medicine than when you do regular psychotherapy, where it's pretty straightforward. You have 50 minutes once a week and, you know, people come, you know, in short term, maybe for 2 to 3 months, in long term for, you know, 12 to plus months. While here it's kind of unpredictable how, you know, how long people will be in treatment. It's very individualized and we, you know, so it requires more flexibility on the therapists. And because the medicines are, you know, very powerful catalysts of the psychological process, and, you know, a lot of times you will hear people say that like one session with psychedelics can be, you know, or bring up what maybe like a month in therapy before didn't. So there is this potential of this fast change and improvement and, or, you know, kind of process, but as well, it brings up more of the issues of transference and countertransference.
Can you explain transference and countertransference?
Yeah. So those are the feelings that, you know, the client will have towards the therapist and then the feelings that a therapist will have towards the client, you know, and that oftentimes those are based on, you know, relationships from the past. So that, you know, some of the relational patterns that the client has kind of show up in the therapeutic relationship. And then the counter transference is like how the therapist feels towards the client, you know, and there can happen much faster when working with psychedelics than in regular talk therapy. And, you know, those can be feelings of, you know, appreciation and love and attraction towards the therapist, as well as, you know, frustration, anger, and, you know, and then the psychotherapist responds to that, you know, and oftentimes there can be that the therapist can feel in a similar way how maybe other people feel towards the client in everyday life. So we can use those feelings in helping the healing and supporting the process. But because it's you know, it's much more vulnerable state working in the expanded state of consciousness, and it happens faster, there is a greater need for consultation and, you know, discussion about those the cases and the feelings that come up in the sessions.
Mm. Veronica, you've studied a lot of different modalities. I was looking over your website and the different trainings that you've done. You've done a lot of work with EMDR, internal family systems. You mentioned earlier in the conversation, Hakomi. You are a very well-trained therapist. And because you've got such a breadth of experience with these different modalities, I'm curious, what of these do you find most efficacious when combined with psychedelic therapy? Do you find yourself leaning more into, say, internal family systems, or are you using a lot of EMDR, or perhaps it's client-specific? I'm curious, what are you seeing that the other modalities you're bringing into this work you're doing?
Yeah, you know, I think that trainings that I have or trainings that people have are, you know, compatible and useful for working with medicine, because it is assisted psychotherapy. So first and foremost, it is a psychotherapy. And I think the relationship, the container of the relationship is so important for, you know, the set and setting and the possibility of the healing. So, you know, the relational part and the relational psychotherapy is really helpful. I work a lot with trauma, and, you know, trauma, there's a lot of what we could talk about was healing trauma, but trauma's kept in the body. And so there is oftentimes sort of somatic expressions that people are working with and that the medicines kind of open up, you know, somatic releases. And so I think any type of somatic therapy is really helpful to be familiar with. So it could be like SE or Hakomi. And so these therapies, you know, the somatic therapies, they're working with the nervous system, the nervous system regulation. And they're looking at, you know, activations in the nervous system, how they're kind of expressed. And then, you know, there are some that work more, you know, more with touch, you know, like a body work. So like Sten Grof in the holotropic breath work, a body work is a big part of the process. And what, you know, he said is that the symptoms in the body, the medicine kind of, or the breath work, non-ordinary state, brings it up. And so it could feel like pain in some part of your body or pressure. And we will invite the client or the participant to connect with that feeling and almost like wanting to make it bigger so it can move through the body. And sometimes we can use touch or body work to help them do that. So that, you know, that it's helpful when you have training in somatic work and somatic therapy. But, you know, as well, people who don't have that are able to do this work. So, but it's because something what I have, I find very useful. And the internal family systems is type of therapy which works with parts. So kind of the idea comes that, you know, the Dick Schwartz who developed it worked with families. And then he realized like we all have these internal parts, you know, there's like younger part and part that is, you know, helping us not to feel something. And it's a therapy that's very useful in working with trauma. And so, you know, our work with MDMA or low dose ketamine can really be, you know, well combined with this approach. But, you know, saying all of that, the way how I look at working with the medicine is, you know, really trusting the medicine and trusting the inner healing intelligence, trusting that the patient has this innate capacity to heal. And we are creating the optimal set and setting, the conditions, so this healing can happen. And the medicine is like a compass, you know, it kind of helps to show us where we need to go, what we need to follow. And so in that way, it's actually important to put aside these trainings and this, you know, kind of ideas, what is happening or what needs to happen, and bring, you know, our full presence and mindfulness and being open and supportive to what is coming up. And so some of these therapies that I've been trained in, you know, I might use some of the you know, that lens in the session. And sometimes they're more useful in the integration sessions or, you know, in the preparation integration where a lot of the work happens of kind of making sense of what came up in the session and bringing it into everyday life and making, you know, changes in person's life or, you know, facilitating insights. So sometimes we will work with these, you know, other therapies in the sessions, but oftentimes it's more even useful in the integration sessions. And so that's why, you know, people have a variety of training, and I think we'll find that helpful in the work.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that you know, there's these two different kinds of segments. There's the experience and then there's the integration, and there's so many tools that are available. And I love you mentioned Dick Schwartz. I had the honor of interviewing Dick on this podcast, and he also talked about trusting the inner healer and trusting the self as the guide of the process. And I think that that's a really profound approach to psychedelic therapy. It's a very humble approach to say that, you know, it's actually the patient that is doing the healing, and both the psychedelic medicines and also the practitioners are there to kind of facilitate and sort of see where, you know, what needs to come out of the body, as you've pointed out, or where the patient is actually needing to go next. And that sounds like that's, you know, it's a science, but that also sounds like somewhat of an art. There's like a marriage of the kind of science and art of that process. Have you found it to be so?
Yeah, you know, and kind of, you know, one of the things what Dick Schwartz said, and he, you know, I didn't get that from him directly, but Mike Midhoffer, who is the principal investigator in the MAP study, who developed a protocol and who was training us, he used this, you know, and he learned it from Dick Schwartz, was like, wait, and it's like a being an acronym, like, why am I talking? You know, and I think
I need that too. I need that as a podcaster. I need the why am I talking? Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I love it even in, you know, why am I touching? You know, why am I talking? So in the session, it's really about, is that something what is needed? And is it going to be helpful and supportive of the process? Or is it because I am uncomfortable with what is coming up? You know, and so that's kind of coming back to what I was saying, that our work is so important in this, of learning to sit and be with our own challenges, our own suffering and the suffering of the world, to be able to sit with patients and allow them to really go as deep as they need to go for their healing. And so that, you know, we will talk, we will interact, we will use touch, but, you know, checking in with ourselves, like, where is the impulse to do that coming from?
I did psychedelic peer support through the Zendo Project. And so I learned a lot about sitting, not guiding. And it's interesting, once you've learned that, how much it seeds through the entire way you could support another human being in any situation. So for me, after I'd done the psychedelic peer support training and I'd done some sessions with the Zendo, I would find that when my friends were having a hard time, instead of leaping in to save them and fix it and give them the advice and that sort of active thing, I would have more like, oh, well, how can I support you? Or, you know, what do you need right now? Like, there's a whole shift in the way that you approach people who are suffering when you recognize that it's not necessarily in their best interest for you to solve or tell them what to do or, you know, these sorts of things. And I found that to be really powerful. And I think psychedelic medicine is just the perfect environment with which to, as you say, to wait and see and allow things to unfold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. And just, you know, being present and letting as well the experience of the person to impact you, you know, and them seeing what impact it has on you and how you can hold that and join them in that, you know, because I think sometimes when there are, you know, protocols and ways of what we do, like we can, you know, and they're useful, right? Like they're in like CBT therapy, it can be really useful at times, you know, and even in EMDR, like we have a protocol that we follow and there is both like allowing this inner healing and there's protocol. But if we can be fully present and let, you know, the person's experience impact us and respond and join them in that, I think that is very beautiful.
I want to talk for a moment about the medicines themselves, because you've worked extensively with ketamine, and Polaris is a ketamine-assisted therapy center. You've also trained with MDMA, and I'm curious, between these two, which are the ones that are the most available at this point with the breakthrough therapy designation for MDMA and with the ketamine-assisted therapy, you know, it's a Schedule III drug, so it's, you know, you can prescribe it. You work with trauma, you work with different kinds of patients. If you were able to, at this point, choose an MDMA experience versus a ketamine experience, are you pretty clear on like when you would go for one versus the other? Is ketamine particularly good for, say, depression, and then MDMA particularly good for post-traumatic stress disorder? Or is that just sort of what we've seen them being tested for so far?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of in this ideal world that we imagine that we be able to have all these different medicines and really work individually with people and, you know, and find what might be the best for the person, and that we can think generally that there are these indications, but as well then kind of see from, you know, what happens in the session. And you know, so MDMA is a beautiful medicine and really helpful for working with trauma, you know, and PTSD. It's a beautiful medicine for relationships, you know, attachment. And, you know, there has been a study done with couples, but, you know, right now we cannot you know, even if it was not scheduled, if, you know, there is not a prescription that you can prescribe drug or medicine for a couple's problems, you know, like you can treat one person. But I think that is a great potential in, you know, relationships and healing relationships. And ketamine is, you know, very helpful for treatment of depression, but we see great success as well with anxiety, with certain types of addiction, and with trauma, you know. And I think trauma is it's a quite a complex, you know, way of thinking about it. There are just a lot of different traumas, and then maybe treating somebody who has one-time traumatic incident, like being in a really bad accident, is different than somebody who has complex PTSD, childhood trauma, you know, preverbal early trauma. And, you know, we haven't been able to study it, but I, you know, have a sense that sometimes there are people who actually have a harder time with MDMA when they have very early attachment trauma. Mm. And it is because MDMA, you know, creates this sense of closeness and connection. And, you know, that feeling actually can be a trigger for someone who had very early trauma. And so that maybe, you know, like starting with ketamine might be helpful for that person and then working with MDMA. But, you know, that's kind of like a hypothesis I have that, you know, and that maybe their different medicine might help a person at a different time of in their path. You know, that maybe if somebody is, you know, has PTSD but is very depressed as well, it might be helpful to start treatment with ketamine. They feel a little bit lift of the depression, and then they're working with the trauma. So, you know, hopefully one day soon we'll be able to have, you know, more ideas about it. But yeah, I think there are, you know, indications that might be more suitable for certain types of challenges. And, you know, and then even going further into the fantasy of using these medicine for, you know, psycho-spiritual growth and personal development and consciousness exploration, that, you know, both of these and other medicines will hopefully be possible to be used in those ways.
I'm one of many people, I think, who have used psychedelics for healing on my own over time. And something you were saying about the kind of journey of using a different medicine at a different stage in the journey, I think it's also when you are having a psychedelic experience, it's kind of good to start with a more manageable psychedelic experience and learn the landscape and learn how to operate within it. So for me, I find ayahuasca work to be the most potent healing work that I've done in my life. But there's no way that I could have done that out the gate, I don't feel. I feel like being able to try different psychedelics in my personal journey in different ways prior to that has actually allowed me, like, oh, okay, breath. Oh, okay, like sit up, you know, there's different ways that you navigate that terrain, and you really do need to be sort of like educated. And of course, in my case, and I think there's a lot of people who've had this experience, I had to say, kind of educate myself over time with some, let's say, trial and error to get to the point where I could meet the healing that I needed in those spaces. And I too have a fantasy of a time when a healer can have all of these different medicines in their tool belt and be able to say, okay, now is the time for this gentle low-dose ketamine experience. And that'll be the warm space that you start. And then later we'll move on to this and be able to really work with that trauma. And to your second point, I think working with the trauma, working with the healing, working with those things that feel like they are wrong with us or off or whatever, those end up actually being doorways to the psycho-spiritual realizations and the more expanded consciousness. And that's another thing that I think is so precious about these medicines. It's not taking a pill to treat a symptom. It's actually unlocking the treasure within trauma, which to me is like, that's the real magic.
Yeah, beautiful. Absolutely, that there is this potential of really something greater, not only healing or not having symptoms, but, you know, having this growth from the healing and absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was thinking as well when you're saying about, you know, that with ketamine, for example, we really work with people slowly, you know, that we start somebody with really low dose ketamine. And, you know, ketamine is kind of misunderstood as some people not considering it a psychedelic, and because it's, you know, the designation is dissociative anesthetic. But in the moderate and high doses, it has, you know, very strong psychedelic property. And so when we work with clients, we start with low doses and allowing them to, you know, get familiar with the feels, get familiar how to work with the medicine, how to trust the process when, you know, and the healing can happen through processing challenging experiences, but as well through having beautiful, you know, like positive experiences. And so sometimes in psychotherapy, we're, you know, and a lot of clients are focused on like, I have to go into the darkness and the shadow and work through things. And, you know, I think that is true. And there can be healing through really beautiful experiences and having break from the challenges people are having and awe and, you know, beauty and unity. And so that people are learning how to work with the medicine and then, you know, maybe working with moderate or higher doses. And the other point I wanted to say is kind of what you said about the different medicines, that again, we can, you know, maybe trust this inner healing intelligence that we are kind of guided towards, you know, what medicines to work with. And, you know, sometimes we talk with and we ask clients, you know, like what dose do you feel like is most helpful? What would you want to work with? And, you know, of course we discuss it with the physician and the physician is the one who decides, you know, together with the therapist. But oftentimes, like we'll ask the client, like, what does your inner intelligence say? Like, what does your inner healer feel like we need to do today?
I love that. I really love the sovereignty of the client in the context of this approach, where it's really about putting them in the center, you know. And I think a lot of people, particularly people who've had persistent mental health challenges, that they kind of feel kind of batted around by, you know, providers and insurance and doctors and people telling them things. And that can really compound, especially for, like, for example, a depressed person, that could totally compound the experience of helplessness. Whereas what you're describing sounds very empowering. And I love that. I really appreciate that approach.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people come with so much medical trauma or not being helped and try so many different medications. And so I think that that personal connection and approach and really spending the time is important and empowering people to be able in charge, to be in charge of their healing, and having the possibility that they can actually heal, as you were talking about, is you know, quite a shift.
It's a kind of healing itself to believe that you can heal. You know, a lot of depression is the rumination that there's something uniquely broken with a person. In terms of getting clients to get access to this medicine, one of the big conversations in the psychedelic community is around equal access. Because these therapies take a long time, they take a lot of resources, and you hit it earlier where it's, you know, you can't just use interns who aren't getting paid who are going to get burnt out. That's not an integrity. And at the same time, you don't want these inexorbitant costs for the clients, because then you're just going to be serving the people who have the most. And a lot of people who have a great deal of trauma, their lives are not able to produce the kind of abundance that they would need to then heal it. And so I'm curious, you know, in terms of like insurance covering the treatments or doing sliding scale, like what are some of the ways that you are able to create equal access and to get more people into the clinic who need to be there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a big question, you know, and absolutely, you know, you kind of cover those main, you know, things like how to have like financial access and even, you know, time, like that a lot of people who, you know, have, you know, are in harder situations, they, you know, just the time required for the treatment, oftentimes they cannot afford, you know, like, and when they have kids or single moms and, you know, that there's so many obstacles to this, to get the treatment. And so, you know, the hope is for, you know, insurance companies to be able to cover this treatment. And so there are efforts of groups who are trying to really put data together and show that, you know, investment in this type of treatment is much cheaper than, you know, people who, you know, let's say have a severe, you know, or moderate depression, and, you know, they have to be on antidepressants, seeing a psychiatrist, not being able to work, going to emergency rooms, you know, with the PTSD as well. There are efforts of, you know, specific insurance companies specifically for psychedelic assisted therapies, and, you know, starting with companies who would be, you know, just even internally paying for their employees to be able to have this type of healing. You know, having sliding scales. So we've, you know, thought about different ways of having like a sliding up scale, sliding down scale. So people who have more resources being able to pay more, which then can be used for people who need to pay, you know, cannot pay the fee for the therapy that's needed. Different foundations and funds, you know, that can then, you know, fund treatments for people. But as well, there, you know, there has been challenges that we've, you know, worked with some foundations, but they would, you know, subsidize certain amount of sessions. And that, you know, would create a challenge as well, because when the person comes and starts their treatment, you don't know how that will unfold and if, you know, they will need 2 sessions, 3 sessions or 20 sessions. And so having like access to limited amount of sessions for lower fee sometimes is not the best way, you know, and then kind of we're learning that even in the clinical trials, which is, you know, which is limited of how many sessions person can get, and that some people, you know, need more sessions. So, you know, some of the things what we've done at Polaris is we as well provide a training in ketamine assisted psychotherapy. So we've been providing, you know, low fee or pro bono trainings for people who are serving, you know, underserved communities or communities who have more challenging situation to access the care, and, you know, providing education, because some people don't even know about these type of treatments being available. So it is something that we are having a lot of conversations about and continuing to struggle with. You know, it's not in a good place, but, you know, there are a lot of efforts that hopefully will make this more accessible.
You know, there's one thing that I really like, that the Heroic Hearts Project. Have you heard of the Heroic Hearts Project?
I'm not sure.
Okay, so this is a project that brings veterans to ayahuasca ceremonies. And I don't know that this model would translate, but one of the things that he does is he'll have a sponsorship situation. So it's like half the ceremony is professional athletes and half the ceremony are veterans. And the professional athletes pay for the cost of the veterans to go. And what I love about that is that when you do a sliding scale, when you're like, okay, I'm going to pay more so that someone who has less can have it, it's not as personal. And so it doesn't quite hook people in the same way. But if you're going to sit in your ceremony with, and I don't think this necessarily translates, I just want to share it because I love it. But if you're sitting in ceremony with someone, experiencing their healing with them, and you have more and they have less, like, that can be really edifying for the person who's contributing more and part of their healing and their ability to learn from that, mm-hmm. from that other person who's going through what they're going through. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Jesse and what he does. And I just think that that's a really cool model. And I think it kind of speaks to the community aspect of psychedelic healing. And certainly the people who are involved as healers tend to be a community where we want to forward this medicine, we want to forward this healing. And I think, you know, as you were talking about, you were just saying providing low-cost training for people working with underserved populations. That's like another kind of just building community where the healing is compounded by all of us working together. And I think that's part of the way forward.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're beginning to get to the end of our hour together, which I feel like these conversations go so quickly because I love talking about it. We're beginning to get to the end of our hour together. And I always like to end the show offering my guest the opportunity to speak directly to the aspiring psychedelic therapists and practitioners and healers who are listening to the show. So, you know, not everyone listening to the show desires to be ketamine-assisted therapist, but for everyone listening to the show, they're very interested in this medicine. And I just wanted to give you the stage for the moment to just speak directly to those people who want to be involved in this work.
Yeah, thank you. So I, you know, just what we've been talking about, I believe that, you know, the personal work that people are doing is the most important, you know, the work we are doing on ourselves. And, you know, talking about this work when people are, you know, listen, if you're listening to this podcast, you're interested in the potential of this healing. And so talking about it with people as much as you can about, you know, sharing education, sharing the potential of these medicines. And, you know, furthermore, I think a lot about, you know, ethics of this work and, you know, challenges that can come up. And so having really open conversations and open conversations of what are the right practices in psychedelic assisted therapy, talking about things that go well, but as well as things that don't go well. So people who are coming to this, to get this treatment know, and that as well, there is, you know, the possibility of talking about it so that there is not a shame around when something happens that will kind of create even more challenge of hiding that, so that people continue to have conversations and inviting others and creating communities that of support and collaboration rather than, you know, competition, so that we try to make, you know, everything we have in an open source, sharing and supporting others to be able to do this work, because it's so needed and so many people need this healing and coming from a place of abundance rather than scarcity. So I, you know, encourage people to get as much education and experience as you can. And, you know, we're always here to connect and support people. So if anyone has any questions, they can always as well reach out to me or to people in our clinic. And we want to support the development of the field and people starting clinics and practices.
Beautiful. You know, I just remembered that at the beginning of the show, I promised that we would return to a conversation about set and setting, which we have not done. So I know that you've given some talks about the importance of set and setting in an American context. And, you know, we all within anyone who's kind of connected to psychedelics at all knows the term set and setting. But I'm curious if maybe there's some things that you've learned about creating a proper set and setting for this type of healing that may not be quite as well known.
Yeah, so quickly what that would be. But, you know, I think there's importance of really like honoring what we've learned, what has been done before us. So honoring, you know, that this is a new treatment, but it's been here for thousands of years. So really remembering that, and as well honoring instead of appropriating, I think is important to really honor the roots of this work. And I do look at these experiences as, you know, that each one of these experiences is has a potential to be extraordinary experience. And I was, you know, just at a conference the other day and we were having conversation with a colleague there, and he was saying, you know, any experience in life should be extraordinary. It shouldn't be just that the psychedelic experience is it, you know, you should live your life like that. And I agree. And entering into these non-ordinary states, I think is something extraordinary, and that people can have, you know, life-changing experiences through this work. And so that us as therapists need to keep that in mind, that even if we have a busy week and I have, you know, 4 ketamine sessions scheduled, to really take the time and hold a space in a sacred way. And, you know, so the setting is like creating the trust and the comfort that's created by our presence and our trust in the medicine and the work. And, you know, then all the little things like, you know, comfort and eye shades and you know, curated music and the set of our mindset, you know, how we are approaching the work, how we are feeling, and knowing that, you know, like if something's difficult happening in my life and I come to the session, it has a potential of impacting my clients. So really, you know, taking care of ourselves and the self-care is important, and exploring a lot of the, you know, the beliefs and things that people are coming in so that they can, you know, talk about it and be aware of what their set is, what their intention for the session is, so that it is not something that we just say set and setting, but that we really put attention to that and practice that. And, you know, like I feel so honored to be able to do this work, and I don't take it as granted. And I always appreciate the trust the clients give to me and to us to go into these vulnerable states and allowing me to witness that. So I, you know, have a deep gratitude, and, you know, and I feel like we are doing the, you know, if we are taking the medicine, or if they're the person who's taking the medicine is doing the work for all of us, you know? So as well, gratitude for them, you know, they're the ones who are going deep in and doing the work for all of us. So just so much gratitude for people who take the courage and do that.
I love that. I love that. And Veronica, I so appreciate the approach that you are taking to this work. It really shines through the whole interview, the care and the dignity with which you are approaching clients who are coming in, who have, I'm guessing in many cases, have not felt that in their experience in the medical system. And so I just really am grateful for the space that you're holding with Polaris. I'm grateful for your time today in sharing your wisdom with me and with our listeners. And just before we go, how can the people listening to the show support you? How can they follow your work? Where should they go to check things out? All things Polaris, all things Veronica Gold. Tell me about it.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's you know, that's it. Just our website, polarisinsight.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. You know, if people are therapists, we offer the Academy of Assisted Psychotherapy training. So that's, you know, all information about it you find on our website. And, you know, if you're interested in working with us, please connect with us. If you want consultation, we'll be happy to do that.
Wonderful. Well, Veronica, thank you so much for coming on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast today. And I just so appreciate your wisdom and your time.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's delightful to be here.
Take care.
Bye. Take care.
Okay, so we're done. So that was the podcast.
Okay.
How was it? Did it all feel kind of smooth for you?
Yeah, you're such a good interviewer, and make it so comfortable and easy. So that makes all the difference.
Oh, well, that's the set and setting. I'm trying to give you my set and setting, which is to make you feel at ease so that you feel more easeful in sharing the incredible wisdom that you have. So I appreciate you acknowledging that. That's, you know, you're doing your work and podcasting is mine. So, you know.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was really nice and easy and comfortable talking with you, and just your passion for the work and for the healing and your own work, you know, it just comes through. So it's really wonderful.
I'm not only a podcaster, I am also a psychedelic client. I also receive this work, and I also, you know, I do the trauma work. I do the, you know, and I, you know, attachment wounds, early childhood trauma. Like, I'm not here by accident. So, you know, I'm very grateful to people like you who are holding that space, because I've spent a lot of time in it.
I think who of us isn't, you know?
Right?
I think that's how we come to the work, you know, finding our own healing or healing our own families and our own wounds, and then being able to use that, you know, like, I think only as much as deep we can go in ourselves, that's what we can hold for others. So,
ooh, that's good. I might have to keep that part in the podcast then, because that was just really nice what you just said. So, well, Veronica, thanks again. I really appreciate it. I loved our conversation today.
Thank you. Really nice meeting you.
Really nice to meet you too. Take care.
Yeah. Bye. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please join the Psychedelic Therapy Facebook group to talk about it. You can also share it with your friends or leave a review on iTunes so more people can discover the show. The Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is presented by Maya, a platform designed to help psychedelic therapists manage and measure client journeys. You can head to mayahealth.com to learn more. The show is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide mental health or medical advice. Thanks for listening.